Chapter 4, Police Blotto. They say I was only unconscious for a few seconds, that I hopped up again almost immediately and started making statements to the police, speaking a mile a minute in gibberish as they handcuffed me and led me away. If that's true, I don't recall any of it. The first thing I do remember is coming to in the back seat of a patrol car as it sped through intersections, running red lights. I didn't know if we were headed for the hospital. I wouldn't have objected much if that were the case. I was feeling plenty of aches and pains. The aches localized above the shoulders where the nightstick had walloped me. And the welts and scratches generalized all over were souvenirs from the hedgerow and the snow fence. Each vying to do the same thing, send as many pain signals as possible through my clogged nervous system highway. We careened around a corner and I fell over. The fact that my wrists were still handcuffed behind me made it difficult to sit back up. I was riding in the back of an NYPD patrol car, apparently the transfer of custody from campus police to city police had already taken place. I missed that. At the station, I was pulled out and marched up the precinct steps. Under merciless bright lights, the event was captured on video for posterity, as well as the morning's newscast, no doubt. It was absolutely amazing that the media could be on hand so quickly, so late at night. However, when it comes to covering crimes of a sordid nature, journalism obviously never sleeps. I must admit, too, when I saw the footage that ran, I did appear guilty. I'm sure I would have to any jury basing its verdict on looks alone. With my hands cuffed behind me, I was fast-walked between two grim, uniformed police officers who pinioned my arms and hustled me up the steps. The welts across my chest stood out starkly under the camera lights and looked exactly like fingernail scratches. Inside, the brusque treatment continued. I was efficiently processed, while hard, accusatory looks continued from all quarters. But no attempt was made to question me. I was then marched up two more flights of stairs to a second-floor interrogation room equipped with a two-way mirror. The handcuffs were removed. "Sit," I was ordered. Straight-back wooden chairs were all that were available. I sat, but didn't lean back. Too cold. Left to wait, I shivered as the wall clock continued to tick off its slow minutes. Meantime, no doctor. The door finally reopened just as I was dozing off. A second bank of overhead fluorescent lights buzzed on. The officer entered and removed my handcuffs, and then a detective entered. I attempted to rise. "Don't get up." She introduced herself as Detective Lippincott. "Your name is Parker Robinson?" "Yes." She came up to me and lifted my chin so she could examine where the nightstick had landed. Somewhere in her mid-30s, she had eyeliner and bottle green eyes with crow's feet at the corners. "Would you like to see a doctor before we talk?" "No." "How about an attorney?" "I'd rather see a bed." "May I see your hands, please?" I presented them. She looked them over carefully, both sides. "Stand up now, please." Gingerly I did. She examined me front to back, paying close attention to my welts. "Whose fingernails did those?" "The hedgerow." "Tell me what happened." I described everything, from locking myself out to sighting the body, leaping the hedgerow, and then being clubbed unconscious by the overzealous campus security guard. She listened without interruption, and then, when I was finished, asked,